question about, I don't want to think about all of those details and fight about all that past and that history. To me, I am not a big, you know, pro-American. I know all the horrible things about our country, right? But one thing that I think is good about this country is that people come here from all over the place, and the flip side of us being so capitalist is that we're just focused on, let's have a nice life, let's make money, let's have jobs, let's put food on the table, right? And in my opinion, you can have all this horror and cruelty and whatever, but people don't fight with each other and kill each other if there's economic... If people are having jobs and exporting things and making money, and people want to have a nice life and make money. So what can we do economically? Is there something that we can do to help direct our investment, or, and not just like in the divest boycott way, but in the like positive way, help invest in Palestinian business or trade, or, you know, buy and invest, and what can we do economically?
I like the idea, but in fact, it hasn't turned out the way you would have liked. This idea of an economic peace is one that's been not just floated, but has been implemented to some extent, and it's been fairly tragic, I think. There have been, for example, industrial zones set up that were supposed to enable Palestinians and Israelis to work together, and what it's meant is that Israeli companies could use West Bank labor at lower than Israeli market rates and provide jobs to Palestinians so that they could have livelihoods, et cetera, et cetera. Also, the whole idea of the economic peace, which is very much promoted by Japan and by the U.S. to some extent, is instead of or in lieu of political rights.
Can we do that at the same time while we're writing to our president, to our, you know, representatives?
One would think, and I certainly think that individuals and well-meaning people can invest in positive, constructive things that in Palestine, but the whole idea of an economic peace precedes, it already has a history, it's already tainted, sadly. It's badly, badly tainted, unfortunately. I also want to say one other thing, which is that the neoliberal economic model has hit Ramallah with a force. And what has happened, especially, I'd say, even in the last 10 years, is the banks are way overcapitalized. They're loaning money to everybody. So people have cars and houses nicer than here in West Newton that they could never, ever afford as a tactic for making sure that they will not get involved in anything political. That these folks are now chained, economically chained, to the pro-U.S. Palestinian ideology, and they feel that they can't take any risks or speak out, or even on behalf of their own rights or own family members, because they'll never, ever pay off the loans that they have. Also, because of that, the inequality has gotten so bad that the gap between these, you know, folks living outside of their means and, let's say, the regular person in Calandia refugee camp is just huge. And that economic inequality goes along with the whole divide and conquer mentality. It's really unfortunate.
Nora Homby here grew up in Ramallah. He's been wanting to speak.
Yeah.
Please.
Well, so I was going to say that Hamas was basically created by Israel. They were created so that they would resist the PLO. They were not happy with the PLO, so they strengthened Hamas. Eventually, then the PLO was weakened by Israel. You know, they surrounded the compound, and, you know, when they weakened the PLO, the Hamas got stronger. And that's how it happened. Now Hamas is a terrorist against Israel. What do they say? The same thing with Lebanon, with Hezbollah. Hezbollah wasn't there before Israel occupied southern Lebanon. Mm-hmm. After southern Lebanon was occupied, then the Hamas, the Hezbollah formed as a freedom fighter to get rid of the Israelis from Lebanon. Finally, they got out. Now they are a terrorist, you know, movement. It all depends who's talking. For them, they are freedom fighters. For Israel and the United States, they are terrorists. That's what's happening. And we should not judge people created by Israel as enemies or terrorists. It's their fault and their policies.
Thank you.
I yield.
Oh, you yield? Okay. To any particular gentlewoman or man?
Of your call.
Okay. So why don't we go now right around this. Amay, did you want to say something as well?
No?
Okay, please.
Just a couple of quick things. One, you mentioned Sam Bahour, mm-hmm. and one of the things he writes so eloquently about is about how actually investing in Palestine business economically can be counterproductive. He talks about how he started the communication system and that he would order equipment, but it would get held up. It could have been fixed almost immediately, but Israel, because they control the borders, held up the parts that he needed for like a year or two and prevented. So what he says is, please, what we need is control over our own borders. We need a free country. So he will list some of the things that need to happen in order for people to be able to make use of that, because all that money gets funneled through Israel.
Right.
They have to buy the captive market.
That's right.
Two, around the rockets, I've been studying some of the rockets, and the best documented case of how most of these rockets, I don't defend, but nevertheless, most of the rockets are in response to Israeli missiles, and probably the easiest case to read about was when the 2012 attack started, and Gershon Baskin, who is an Israeli, co-founded IPCRI, educational Israeli-Palestinian group, who also negotiated for the release of Gilad Shalit, people who are familiar with that Israeli soldier, cried the day that there was an announcement that Israel had just killed Jabari, who was the military leader of Hamas at that time. And this is November 2012. And he said, on this very day, this is an NGO conference in Jericho, he said, on this very day, I was supposed to receive from this a military leader of Hamas a peace proposal that has been in the works for the past few weeks. It's been going back and forth from him. He had just come back from Hamas in Cairo. He had been talking with Israeli leaders, and he was supposed to receive it that afternoon, and Israeli leaders were expecting to receive it that night. But instead, Israel just killed the man who was supposed to have been working on this, and was supposed to deliver it that very day. He said, now the rockets will fly in retaliation, and Israel will say, we have no choice but to defend ourselves, and they will send missiles, and it will start whatever the 2012, which is what happened. However, Gershon Baskin wrote that up, and it was on the Daily Beast that day. I said, you're going to publish this? And he said, yes, it's going to be the Daily Beast, 11 o'clock this morning, and that was a Thursday, and or Friday. And then on Sunday, it was an op-ed in the New York Times, where it said, Gershon Baskin, who negotiated the release for Gilad Shalit, says that Israel assassinated the hope for peace. So actually, although the New York Times is not known for for publishing these kinds of things, if anyone wants to go back and find a source to explain this one time when Bibi Netanyahu was caught in a bold-faced lie, saying we have no choice but to defend ourselves, when in fact this Israeli said, actually, you started this. The third thing is around the negotiations for the ceasefire tomorrow. I understand what Mass Peace Action sent around this past week, but that there were six agreements so far. One of which was that Gaza fishermen should be allowed to fish out to 12 nautical miles without being fired upon. International law says 200. And I think it was the 2012 agreement where they were allowed to fish out to something like 50. So Israel, this is like a concession Israel's making. What right does Israel have to fire on Gaza fishermen when they should be allowed to go anywhere within international? Also, they're allowed something like 450 trucks a day or something, which is way down from where they used to be allowed to come in. Mm-hmm. And every single item of the six that were announced is terrible. This is exactly going back to what happened before. No progress. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you can think of that we can do to make sure that there's better, more honest, more fair, somewhat just agreement that is made at this time so all these lives will not have died in vain?
Well, the only thing that I can... This is my opinion, is that all the Palestinians I know in Gaza and in the West Bank feel abandoned absolutely by Egypt, a huge betrayal by Egypt, absolutely by the PA, the Palestinian Authority, and by the United States, who keeps inserting itself as a facilitating or neutral broker when it's not neutral at all. They continue to provide military support to Israel. So I think that the more that we can communicate not only to Palestinians directly that they're not abandoned, but to our own political representatives and say we are still watching and we still do believe that Palestinians, like any other people, have human rights and that we will stand with them till they achieve them. I think that's good. Beyond that, I think there's a lot of technical things that people could do depending on how involved that you want to be. And we can get into those, you know, maybe at another time. But I think right now there's a lot of desire to want to help, and there are risks that help will go astray or get manipulated in not the right way. It's something that I've just studied a lot and published a lot about, which is international aid and how it undermines Palestinian self-determination. So I think that those of you who are giving from your heart, whether it be $10 or $1,000 or maybe you're volunteering or whatever it is that you're doing, that just to always remember that no matter how, quote, needy Palestinians are, they still are competent to lead their own development and their own recovery. And so our help should be in response to their determining of their own priorities, and that we should not be deciding what gets sent and what gets done. So even when really well-intentioned people say, oh, I'm a whatever, I'm a masseuse, and I'm going to take 10 people, and we're going to do massages for trauma recovery in Gaza, it might be fine. But I think it's really important that someone in Gaza has identified that not only as okay, but as a priority, and is coordinating that, because they don't need stuff done to them. They need stuff done with and for them. So that's where sometimes our good intentions get away from us a little bit. Yes?
Yeah, you mentioned about Oslo, like the card coming back. And they disheartened that possibilities. So that means, you know, even a few days ago, we all heard that this time it's going to be different. So what do you think about that? I mean, you really, you are just a pessimist, or just, you know, you're sensing that's what's going to happen.
And
that line,
yes, sure.
I mean, given that no matter who, I mean, somebody called Hamas terrorist, I object to that. Is after all, they are elected by democratically elected people. Given that, who is getting benefited? The Arafat is not there anymore. So who do you think will benefit, like Oslo, like a car?
I would like to just address two things, I think. One of the comments is about, am I pessimistic or... Kind of is there some?
I mean, at least for now. I am a pessimist, but at least for now, what do you think?
What do I think will happen tomorrow?
Yeah.
I don't know. We don't have to wait too long to find out. But the other thing I'd like to address is just something you said about Hamas.
Right.
I think other people can speak better to this than me, but I like to say over and over and over again that being against Israel's actions in Gaza does not mean supporting Hamas.
Right.
And I just want to say that over and over again. Hamas was elected, but it is not a legitimate government now. That election was a long time ago. It has expired, just as the Palestinian Authority has expired, number one. And number two...
We engineered that transition, that we have to accept that.
Yes.
We have engineered that. I mean, that kind of, like, you know, it's like throwing out Bush or Clinton or... Obama,
I think there's many problems with problems with Hamas. There's many problems with Hamas, but I mean, I don't know how deep to get into it. People don't always realize how Hamas was elected. Hamas was elected because they're smarter than Fatah. They're not because they had more support. First of all, it was a lot of there was a social program that was smart. Secondly, it was a protest vote against the corruption of Fatah. And thirdly, In the districts, Hamas ran one candidate per district, where Fatah ran three or four or five, because they didn't want to concede to one another, and they split the vote. If you would have added the Fatah vote in a district, it would have been more than the Hamas vote. But because they split it among their candidates. So there was some electoral things going on. None of that really matters right now, because to me, it's not about what happened. It's about accountability today. Is Hamas a democratic and accountable leadership? I say no. Could they be under these circumstances? Maybe not. But in any case, not. I mean, I just don't put a lot of effort into trying to support Hamas, because it's just, to me, not about that.
It's not the issue.
Right. It's not the issue. My tax money is not going to Hamas. So I don't have to support them or not support them. My tax money is not going there. My tax money is going to Israel. What Israel's doing is wrong. I will stand up against what Israel's doing. And to me, that part is very, very clear. As far as what's going to happen tomorrow, excuse me, everybody here, one second. I'm going to go to you. But as for what's going to happen tomorrow, I have no idea. Do you want to get out?
Yes.
Let him get out. Poor guy. How long has he been stuck there trying to get out?
Blockade.
Hanny, is there something I said so far that you have to...
I'm going to call
on him, but I say stuff wrong sometimes.
No, it's not wrong, but very quick, because I'm not a very sensitive issue, especially to people who have grew up to be liberal, progressive Americans, supporting the anti-Vietnam and all of that. But when it comes to Israel, then it's a different kind of issue, and you always try to find some kind of thing to justify or rationalize why are you against Palestinian self-determination and having independence. And in case of Hamas, it's the new boogeyman, right? The PLO was the boogeyman before. Actually, Hamas winning the election, yes, it was against corruption, but Israel have a lot to do with it, because Israel had picked Mahmoud Abbas in 2004, handpicked him, because they said Arafat is not the guy to talk to. We have no partner for peace. Clinton / Barack came up with that after Camp David, and they went and picked Mahmoud Abbas as the guy that they can talk to. What have they given Mahmoud Abbas from 2004 until 2007? Nothing, zero, zilch. For 3 years, they talked about nothing, and they delivered nothing. So the Palestinian populace said, okay, the guy brought us nothing, let's try those devils. Maybe they'll bring something, and they did not either. Mm-hmm. So it's very easy to pick on Hamas, but there are so many dynamics that we need to consider, and be aware that if Hamas disappears tomorrow, whoever is going to take over and fight for Palestinian self-determination is going to be the new boogeyman. It's given. So until Israel, and that means Israeli citizen as well, until Israel realizes that the Palestinians are full-fledged human being that deserve respect and freedom, nothing is going to be solved. If Israel thinks that... If the Israelis think that they deserve a state, a nation, a democracy, then the Palestinians deserve equally. No more, no less. Just equally. So, anyhow, just to answer the lady.
And thank you for waiting.
It's just a clarifying question. I wasn't sure what did you mean when you said where you felt like a new Oslo was going to happen?
What did I mean when I said I feared a new Oslo? When Oslo happened, the Oslo Accord in 1993-94, I was in the United States at the time, and I was actually in the Arab-Jewish dialogue group, and he was in one too. But I felt that this was going to be the biggest disaster for Palestinians, even before I knew all the details. But now that we know the details, the Oslo Accords was the worst possible thing that could have happened for Palestinians. on just a million ways. Oslo gave Israel the right to control the borders, the population registry, the natural resources, security, etc., etc., etc.
But that was temporarily supposed to be temporary.
And it was supposed to be temporarily. But the point is, and that's the point, Oslo was a...
It was a temporary process. It was worse than that. It was a ploy.
It was a ploy to buy time, and that's what I fear will happen tomorrow. If you ask about my fears, I fear that somehow all of these powers will manipulate or convince whoever's there from the Palestinians, who are not, I point out, representatives, because they're not accountable, they've not been elected, that they're going to make an agreement that they're going to sell out. They're going to make an agreement that's bad for Palestine. And by the way, if it's bad for Palestine, it's also bad for Israelis, because these two people will either live together or they will kill each other. And these two peoples have more reason to live together than any other two peoples that I can imagine, because their fates are interdependent. So if Palestinians go down, the Israelis will also go down, because whatever Israel thinks, you cannot bomb people into giving up their rights. They just don't do it. They just don't.
I think on that one. Yes. No, Laura, let's end it.
Okay, I'm sorry. And then there's, can you want to shout out there and see if you can convince her?
Oh, just one more.
Can she have one more?
So we can hear
Joan, one last one. It's up to you.
One last one.
It's your house.
People are leaving, and it's too hot in here, and there's no air.
I thought it was just in this. Last one.
Okay, I just like to say that I don't feel that it's a problem working over the details of Hamas or other Palestinian leadership. The basic problem is that Israel is a racist state, and the U.S. should not be supporting a racist state. And as long as Israel is a racist state, they will attempt to get rid of people that are not of their race, as they see it. It's all completely absurd. But that's where the basic problem comes in. And if you look forward into the situation with Israel's relationship with the Palestinians, what can you see looking forward? It's a continuing genocide as it is right now. And the problem is that Israel is a racist state. They have to drop being a racist state, and they have to instead adapt the problem, the idea of equality for all people in the area.
Whether or not Israel continues as a racist state or not, what we can do as U.S. taxpayers is we can stop funding it. So I just want to focus on that.
Realistic proposal for, I mean, it's so,
let me stay,
I'm sorry to say this, but it sounds so absurd given that APEC and all those things. The entire, I mean, just few days after the bombing, they sanctioned $225 million.
Yeah, but now it's on hold. Now it's on hold. Now it's on hold. Keep up the good fight. Don't give up hope. If you want me to email you some links to videos, I'm very happy to do that. I'm happy to be... stay here and also to be in dialogue with you by email or now. My daughter has a sign-up list. Before you leave, please sign the list. You can have more than one paper going around. Oh, two papers.
Everyone's done.
Oh, okay, no, they do. Thank you all so much. It was a pleasure meeting you, and I'm staying.
Thank you so much.